There are many people from all over the country who've never met you who think you might be guilty of murder. That is the reality Amanda Knox has been living in for almost a decade now. She became internationally known in 2007 after she was arrested for the murder of her British roommate in Perugia, Italy. Knox spent 4 years in prison before being acquitted. Now, she's back in the spotlight with the release of a new Netflix documentary about her case. So I asked Amanda Knox, what is it like to be constantly connected to this terrible experience?
When I enter into a room and I'm meeting people for the first time, it's like people are not meeting me for the first time. I go into a room and what I am facing is people's ideas about who I am. And they may be positive ideas, they may be negative ideas, they may be coming from a million different sources, and I don't know what they are. And I know that when I'm meeting new people, I tend to be up against that. And I have to just be aware that when I'm coming into a conversation, I tend not to be on an equal level with somebody. They have already an idea of who I am, and then I have to read that and understand that I'm presenting myself in relationship to what their already preconceived notion of me is. And that's just what it's like to be me.
Yeah. What is that like for you? What is it like to be you in that situation?
You know, a lot of exonerees have the same experience where it's this very bittersweet, it's this very, very bittersweet experience because I learned very quickly who are my people, and not in the sense of who believes me and who doesn't believe me, but actually who is it who is going to see me as a person, who's going to look past whatever notions are out there and try to engage with me as a person, because it's very easy, so easy to just like be sitting on what you already think about me. And when people open up to me and engage with me and start asking me questions, that shows that they want to really get me and understand who I am, then I learn very quickly that those are my people and I hold on to those people.
I could really understand you never wanting to speak about that whole Italy episode again, and yet you've written a book, you've cooperated with these filmmakers, this new documentary, you're coming to talk to me about it. Why are you doing all of this?
When I first came home, I thought that I never wanted to deal with this ever again because it was this thing that was just thrown onto me that I had nothing to do with, that I was just being made the center of, but that I did not create. And I struggled for many years trying to reconcile my experience and my life and the way the world reacted to me and interacted with me with the fact that I'm just me. Like, I'm not this big thing that was put on me. I'm just me. And what I realized is that I was never going to feel better or feel like I had a grasp of my life and myself until I acknowledged what happened to me and until I recognized that I'm never going to be the kid who was just studying languages at the university again. I'm also the girl who was wrongly accused of murder. And when I recognize that, I suddenly feel like it's not just this thing that was put on me, but that I can feel empowered in relation to. Suddenly it's this thing that I can take ownership of myself, of my perspective, of my experience, and I can do what I will with that. I can go to poetry class and write poetry about it. I can interact with other exonerees for the first time and actually meet other people who get it and who don't have to ask the same kinds of questions, but who get to the heart of the matter much more quickly. So as soon as I accepted that I'm an exoneree and that I'm always going to be an exoneree and that the greatest good that I can do as an exoneree is give voice to that experience, that was when I felt like I had my life back again.
In Italy, you were convicted of murder. It was overturned. What do you have now as an exoneree? What do you take forward from that, from what's in your rearview mirror?
Just a knowledge, like a very personal knowledge about how the criminal justice system can succeed and how it can fail. What are the types of things that actually happen in a police interrogation room? And what sort of knowledge and experience can be useful to other people. So not only just in relation to the criminal justice system, but also in relation to just living everyday life. It's hard, you know, it's hard to be objective about something terrible that happened to you, right? But what I do know from having gone through my experience is how easy it is to dehumanize other human beings because of some ideology or because of some fear or because of some agenda. And I never, ever want to do that to anyone. And because I know what it feels like. And I think that that kind of perspective would be really useful to many people when they think about engaging with people who disagree with them or, you know, with the political situation or just with like human beings across the world in general. We've all like misunderstood each other, and it takes being radically misunderstood to know how to try to open yourself to understanding other people.
What did you think of the documentary? Because you participated in it, but you didn't, I assume, decide how the filmmakers were going to come out. It's not like a proclamation of your innocence.
No. So, and that's, I think, what makes this documentary so interesting. My innocence was declared in court. That's not the question that's at hand right now. The question is at hand is, how did this happen? If there was never any, if there were stunning flaws in the investigation and there was never any traces that connected me to this crime, how could this go on for so long? How could this get to be so big? How can we still be disagreeing about what the evidence tells us definitively? And the answer to that is the way that we all engage with a story like mine, the story of someone who's wrongfully convicted. Because my case is exceptional in the way that it got tons of media coverage, but it's not exceptional in relation to what other exonerees went through. I mean, there was mistaken eyewitness identification, there was coerced false confession, there was shoddy forensic work. Like, these all happen all the time in cases that get swept under the rug.
Well, so, can we talk about, you mentioned coerced false confession. So you know something about this from both sides, because when you were being interrogated by the police, you falsely accused an innocent man, this Congolese man, your boss. What did that experience teach you?
Oh, gosh, that the kinds of interrogation techniques that we have available now can make anyone think and say anything. I was brought in the middle of the night, denied my rights, denied a lawyer, and told that I had amnesia from having witnessed the murder. And then if I didn't tell them, if I didn't remember what happened, I would lose my life. I would never see my family again. And that terrified me. They raised the stakes suddenly to, oh, you were someone who cared about Meredith and knew her and can help us with the investigation, to, you were involved, we know, and we know the truth, and you don't understand what's going on because you're traumatized, and we're going to tell you what's going on. You met this man because this is what your text message says. They're like, these kinds of techniques where they tire you, they make you weary, they confuse you, they feed you ideas and information, those are techniques that are legal and in use. And until we have the guts to say we need to examine what is going on in these interrogation rooms and not just let them sort of exist in this like weird space where no one gets to touch it except for the police, like, unless we do that, false confessions are going to continue to happen. They happen in over 25% of cases of wrongful conviction.
What role do you think race and nationality played in this? Because here, and it's clear in the documentary, these two men, the man who you falsely accused, Patrick Lumumba from Congo, Rudy Gwede, also African, it seems like those men were dismissed compared with how much attention was paid to you and Mr. Slechito. And that's Italy, but how do you reflect on race and nationality and injustice here?
The numbers are staggering, and the numbers say more than anything that I could say. I mean, so if you take the fact that 13% of our population is Black, 63% of exonerees are Black. What that means is that the most vulnerable people to wrongful conviction are those of ethnic minorities, are those who are poor, are those who are overlooked by the system. The reality is that wrongful convictions are a terrible, like the price of a wrongful conviction is usually the life of a Black man who doesn't have the resources to defend himself.
We're talking with Amanda Knox and about the new documentary about her. And you made a remarkable statement in this documentary. You said, basically, either I'm a psychopath in sheep's clothing or I am you. What do you mean by that?
The prosecution presented me as a monster because that was convenient for their theory. They had to portray me as a monster because it didn't make sense for me to have done this. And the way that the media fed off that and then recycled that and then amplified it only made it so that there were two camps in my story, where I was either a psychopathic monster or I was just a regular person. And when we want to believe that the justice system is on our side at all times, that an innocent person would never have to go through what I went through, that the safeguards of the system are enough to protect against what happened to me from happening, then the only other option is that I'm a monster. I'm not. I can't tell you what to believe. But what I do ask is that you recognize what it is you're saying you believe when you say that I'm guilty, and that it's coming from nowhere.
Finally, Amanda, what do you want from us, the people who live around you, who we weren't there? We may have no, honestly, Amanda, we've never met. I have no opinion about what happened.
Okay.
You know, which has got to be, I don't know what it is. You live with that. But what do you want from us around you?
I would love for you to engage with me, kind of like all the people, like, you know, when, like I said before, how there are some people who dismiss me or who prejudge me and do so to other exonerees as well. What I would love and what I think is necessary for all of us to be better and to ensure that this stuff doesn't happen to anyone else is to really just engage with it and to discuss it and to be inspired by people who have survived it and to acknowledge that it's happening. I mean, one of the greatest healing devices that we can offer someone who went through a traumatic experience is to acknowledge that it happened.
So do you want a stranger to engage with you? I would imagine that you get way more engagement than you want. I mean, do you want people to come up and ask you about what did or didn't happen years ago in Italy, in Perugia?
I think that's oversimplifying the engagement. I think I would love to engage in discussion about the bigger picture and the way that we're all assuming things of each other or going out of our way to be patient with our judgment and examine things clearly with an open mind and not by dehumanizing someone, because it's very easy to come to a judgment when you've failed to recognize that the other person across from you is a human being. And that's a failure. I've had to acknowledge that this is a huge part of my life. And so, yeah, I'll go out of my way to come here in the morning and talk to you about what it means and why it matters to me, but also why it should matter to everyone, because they could potentially be me.
Seattle resident Amanda Knox. A new Netflix documentary about her case was just released on Friday. Today, Knox says she's applying to grad school and she's continuing her work as an activist for the wrongly convicted. Especially today, October 4th, it is International Wrongful Conviction Day. This is KUOW's The Record.